Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 13th, 2011. I'm David McLaughlin, and with me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, I don't know about y'all, but I tell you what, this is always one of my favorite days of the year. The day in which we get an extra hour of sunlight, I really like daylight savings time. Big fan. Don't like the regular standard time because I just think you can do more with the sunlight. So I just think there's a day where it kind of seems like you just got this extra treat, and then it kind of lasts for a good many months. I'll say this, of all the things Bush did during his presidency, I guess the extra few weeks of daylight savings time, I'll give him a thumbs up on that one. Y'all like today?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty day. Well, I just thought I'd throw that in, but Tim, I tell you what, we didn't talk about you doing an outrage of the week, but I think it'd be really easy for you to do one this week. You could just dust one off from about 3 or 4 weeks ago and just change the name Barry Loudermilk to Rand Paul. Let me get my Paul straight, and you'd have an outrage. You might have changed from state government to federal government, but, you know, Barry Loudermilk, I tell you what, this guy ought to be a real star in politics, because if people want crazy, I mean, this guy's working at a state level, and the national people, the big Tea Party stars, are following his lead. And Rand Paul, he is worried about these low-flow toilets, isn't he, Tim?
Oh, yeah, and our light bulbs, I might add, in defense of your great state senator. Paul's just like his daddy, you know, and unfortunately for the people of Georgia's 10th district, I want to throw in, just like Paul Brown, too. I guess it's what the more rabid libertarians do or something. To me, an embarrassment is what they are. Why is a U.S. senator even having an argument with experts in a hearing about toilets and light bulbs, and just total insanity.
It's a clear sign that Rand Paul's just saying that President Obama, that you know, unemployment's going down, and you know, health care, he took care of that. So obviously we can get on to smaller issues like toilets. I mean, to me, that's an admission. Wouldn't you say so, Catherine?
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, when they start talking about toilets and light bulbs, and there was something else in that piece, too. And refrigerators and all the energy efficient stuff that they must feel like we've accomplished a lot.
You know, the thing is, you get worried that Senator Paul is going to spend all his time talking about stuff like this. I wonder how the people of Kentucky who need jobs and the economy fixed and all that are going to feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's just going to be the head of the crazy, but he's going to be loved by, you know, the Tea Party folks for bringing up stuff like this. Was Benjamin Franklin, he's the one that said, waste not, want not? Was that one of his poor Richard Almanac sayings?
Yeah.
And, you know, those Tea Party people, they love the Founding Fathers. So does Rand Paul not believe in Benjamin Franklin when he said, waste not, want not?
He just doesn't like anybody telling him what to do.
Yeah. It's almost like he likes no laws whatsoever.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Lawlessness. Okay, well, that's a real plan. Well, I guess since we talked about Senator Loudermilk, I think we ought to finish up his little segment for the day. He brought up a bill before the Georgia State Senate, Senate Bill 209, and he wanted to ban abortion in Georgia. I think it was mainly to close down the abortion clinics The bill got a lot of attention early, and now it seems like it's tabled. Catherine, what's the status of that bill?
Well, let's just be clear. It wasn't to ban abortions in Georgia. It was to make all abortions have to be done in hospitals. And most hospitals do not perform abortions unless they're emergencies, like in an emergency situation. High number of abortions most of the abortions that are performed in Georgia are performed in clinics and doctor's offices. So this was a plan to make it required that you have an abortion in the hospital, which would, in essence, ban abortions in Georgia. But it was very cagey. But they tabled it. I'm not sure I didn't follow the discussion about why it was tabled, but it's my understanding that it probably will not be brought up again before crossover day. So it's probably out for the year, which is good news.
Yeah, well the thing I do wonder is a lot of the, you know, Republicans are always talking about, you know, abortion, banning abortion, ending it, repealing Roe v. Wade. What do they want to say? And they never deliver on it. You know what? I like to give Senator Loudermilk some credit here. It seemed like he was actually trying to deliver on it. You know, how many times, we were talking about George Bush, how many times did he talk about abortion? And did he do Fang want abortion, even though he had the Senate and the House in control? Tim?
Run that by me again, David. I did not hear you very well.
I'm sorry. The Republicans always talk a big game on abortion, but they never deliver. Senator Loudermilk delivered, if you will, or tried. I mean, why don't the Republican voters expect more of what they believe in?
You know, I have asked many about that, and they really don't know what to say to that, because let's look at the first 6 years of the Bush presidency as an example. There they had their golden opportunity. They had the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch locked up in this country. If they were ever going to appeal Roe v. Wade, well, that was their chance, and they never even moved on it. And I'm going to tell you why. Because they can do the math, and they want pro-choice voters to vote for them, too. They use it as a wedge issue to stir their base up. They talk a good game about it. They get the troops roused, but they don't deliver. They have no intention of delivering. And they control the state of Georgia, right, Catherine? And you see, this bill is not, you know.
I don't think they really want to stop. I mean, it's something they can always use as long as as long as Roe v. Wade has not been overturned, and as long as abortions are still being provided, and as long as they're still legal, it's always something they can go back to their voters and say, this is what we're going to fight for you for, because we know you're against it. But as soon as they do this, then they lose the impact of those, anti-choice voters, right? Because there's a lot of people that's really all they vote about. Like, that's their thing. Like, they're just against abortion, and they don't care about anything else. So as soon as that issue is off the table, they're going to lose that portion of their base. So I don't think they have any intention of...
You know, I know people like you, Catherine, who... I can think of one fellow in particular. He sets that as his gauge for his vote. Is this person pro-life? I will not vote for pro-choice candidates, even if they are in my own party. And, you know, I've got to admire the man for that, but also I've got to remind the man, this party, the Republican Party, has made you a lot of promises about that they have never delivered on. At what point do you say, wait a minute, why am I voting this one issue when the party I keep voting for seems to care nothing about realistically doing something for the issue? At what point do these voters say, okay, I've got enough carrots, you know, give me the meat? I mean, David, when are they going to finally latch on this?
I mean, honestly, the only thing I see that the Republican Party ever does is they pass license tags. you know, that's, and it give a bunch of lip service. I mean, honestly, if you could say, okay, in Georgia, what have these Republicans done since 2002 when they took control of the governor's mansion and the state senate, 2004 when they took over the House as well? What have they done? I see some license plates. End of list.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just I just wish that these voters that do care deeply about this issue would demand some accountability, because honestly, it would probably be a third-party effort. You'd have your Chamber of Commerce Republicans, and you'd have your Values Voters Republicans, and they wouldn't stand together, and you wouldn't have the big tent, and they'd split, because I tell you, now, not every Democrat agrees on every issue, but I don't think there's an issue, you know, a Democratic issue in which the Democratic Party has failed to deliver so miserably when they've had numbers on an issue that the majority of their voters care about, like the majority of the voters are pro-life in the Republican Party. I just think it's just this big boogeyman they like to pull out, and the ones that are really in control of the party care about taxes and, you know, business regulations, and they don't give a full, you know, flip about this, and they use
but
people.
They,
and it's about time
they get called
out.
They still want those voters, don't they? They still pay those voters that lip service, and it's cynical.
Yeah, and it just, you know, I think it takes sometimes people like us, you know, maybe giving some of these people that we don't agree with a little advice. You know, if they're not going to be better that for you, take your ball and go home. well, and I guess, you know, we are a political show. We got a little issue oriented there, but talking about some raw politics, in Florida, Bill Nelson, he's been in the U.S. Senate for a while now. He's coming up for reelection in 2012. Doesn't look like the best pickup opportunity for Republicans, but obviously it's in the South. You know, I'm sure they have to, you know, feel they can put up a candidate and have a good chance, particularly after the governor's race this past time, in which, you know, that they had a seat where they very easily could have lost and they won. But the Hill's reporting that Republican leadership keeps courting former U.S. Representative Joe Scarborough, but that's probably not the reason they're that interested in him, that he served in the House a decade ago. It's that he's been on MSNBC News doing their morning show called The Morning Joe for about the last decade. Now, I kind of think it's funny that the Republican Party has had to resort to MSNBC host and not Fox News host. But, Catherine, what do you make of Joe Scarborough and him being a possible candidate for U.S. Senate?
Well, I just wonder if he's willing to give up his, you know, big paycheck with MSNBC. Well, I don't know how big his paycheck is with MSNBC, but I think that's the kind of candidate that we fear, right? I mean, he's got a very recognizable name, and he's articulate, and, I mean, I think he's crazy, but that he is the exact candidate that we fear, because he's very well known. He's got a, you know, bully pulpit. Even if he does step down from his position, which I'm sure he would have to, I'm sure MSNBC would demand that if he did decide to run, he's still, you know, recognizable. And so he is it's a fear for me. I think it's a, you know, it makes the race tougher.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts on this?
Well, for some reason it makes, first of all, I don't think we know for certain that this is true. There have been some stories that I looked at today where some Republicans have denied that they are recruiting him. I don't think he's had much of anything to say about it, so I don't know. And I agree with Catherine that he would have to give up a fat paycheck to run against a tough opponent. And in a presidential election year, so unless he was looking at a kind of a slam dunk kind of deal, I don't think he would do it. Plus, there are some detractors in his own party who consider him something of a rhino simply because he is on MSNBC. And I think he would probably face a primary challenge and a significant one from the right. You know, Rubio Crist again. So, I don't think he'd do it.
Yeah, I think y'all are right on a lot of scores. He gets a paycheck, and he can actually influence things by being on
right.
A news channel, having his own show, because, you know, a lot
right.
of it's about influence. It's probably less stressful. It's only a few hours a day. It's probably a little more glamorous. I'd rather, you know, decide my own topics every day to talk about than have to react to Rand Paul and, you know, whatever toilet crusade he's on, like he would in the U.S. Senate. And it is a tough seat. He would have opposition from the right because, as far as the Republican Party goes, he's in the center of the Republican Party, if not on the left side of the Republican Party. By no means is that saying the left. But, I mean, you're looking at this party, and, of course, this is a party that's into purity. And then if he makes it through, Bill Nelson, you know, former, I guess, I don't know if you can call him astronaut, but he went into space, you know, pretty popular in that state. And I don't think he'd have an easy time of it. So, and then irregardless of how the numbers look in Florida for the president, and I actually hadn't seen any numbers yet for the president in Florida, but I do know states like North Carolina and Virginia, other southern states, like we talked about in the past, the president's not doing that bad.
I have, and the president's pretty competitive in Florida, and that's certainly good news for Nelson and not very good news for Republicans running for that seat. Don't it give you the appearance that a name like Scarborough that comes up that really maybe they are thrashing about a bit down there in Florida? You would think they would have somebody lined up to go after him.
Yes, it's really funny. A lot of places are having a lot of recruitment issues. And you would think, you know, you see when you see some southern states, and we're going to talk to Lamar Parmentel from the Daily Kingfish here in about 15 minutes about Louisiana. Mississippi had some recruitment issues. We had some recruitment issues in Georgia in certain races.
Yeah, but,
and you understand when the layout. But then Florida, yes, and the Republicans, you know, saying, hey, we've got this wave going on. But there's a lot of places where people are deciding they don't want to just throw their name on the ballot for the sake of having their name on the ballot. You know,
it's not worth that much. No, because it's an awful experience now with the way all this gotcha reporting and, you know, dragging their families and everything they've ever done into the limelight is. But I have to tell you, I'm really struggling with the idea that being a host on MSNBC is more glamorous than being a U.S. senator. I can think of nothing more glamorous than being a U.S. senator.
Well, I mean, I don't know that people are in, you know, the politics, if you will, anymore.
I think that is the best job, U.S. Senate, best job. And
well, I mean, you get to serve 6 years, you know, but it's, I think as far as, like, if you want to say, hey, what's my legacy? What did I do for, you know, to make the world a better place? I would hope that you would think that actually being a senator and governing was better than having a, you know, a show that was, you know, at least half entertainment, if not more. But, I mean, I think in the today's world, if you look at, like, you know, people keep saying, say, Mike Huckabee won't give up whatever show he does on Fox News. And if I'm not mistaken, it's a weekly show on the weekend. I can't imagine that it gets the viewership if you had five days of Joe Scarborough show up.
I tell you what, Huckabee gets $500,000 now, you know, to do that show.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
what I'm saying. He's thinking about giving his show up
I'd say
to run
Scarborough
for president.
I'd say Scarborough gets more. And I think if Joe Scarborough is nothing else with his background in politics, he's a very practical man. And he understands what we have been saying, that he could step out on faith and run and be standing there empty-handed next November.
And he actually walked away from it. One thing I'll say honestly is if he were to run, that the move to make would be, for him being a Republican, walk away, run for Senate, you know, try to get your cachet with that group, and then take over Fox's morning show, because obviously, I mean, that's like the three blind mice, that bunch they've got. I couldn't tell you one of their names, because I don't watch them, but I don't think they have any name value to their current crew, so he could take his operation over to Fox, where he would probably get more Republican viewers and probably more just raw viewers in general. You know, but to me, that would make more sense for him. But I don't know if a run for Senate has to, you know, be a prerequisite for that. Well, as much as we say, hey, he might actually be a decent candidate for the Republicans, one person I don't think we're as high up on for him running for national office would be Haley Barbour. You know, some of the comments he's made, some things he's done, I don't think we think his chances are that good. And yet he's hired another New Hampshire staffer, and he's looking at trying to put together a team. This is a guy, Paul Young, don't know him. He's from out of Portsmouth, New Hampshire, does Novus Public Affairs, not familiar with it. But still, the fact that he's hiring New Hampshire folks, he's probably not looking to solidify Mississippi politics by any means. Catherine, has anything changed on the Barbour viability?
No, he's not viable.
So why is he doing this?
He's probably trying to angle for either, you know, another, you know, like vice president or, you know, something. If the Republicans prevail, he's probably just trying to angle for some other appointment. You know, I think there's a lot of that kind of angling going on during this, you know, usually it's a little bit later, but I just can't imagine that he would be viable.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm on all the time, so.
Yeah, well, I'll let Tim get on this, and I've got another question about all this. Tim, what's changed about Haley Barbour?
Well, you know, look, he's a good soldier in the party, but he's in the 5 to 10% range at best if he runs in this crowded field. And that's the best he'll do. Some of his more unfortunate comments about race and other things will disqualify him with a lot of voters. And frankly, with voters not from the Deep South, he's going to come across as something of a boss hog type.
Yeah, exactly.
Candidate, and it's just not going to play well. And he really looks old. And there are younger, far more vibrant candidates. I mean, Mitt Romney is a young-looking 60-some-odd, and Haley Barbour, frankly, just looks like he's one pork chop dinner away from the boneyard. So it just isn't going to work, David. 5 to 10% at best. And I agree with Catherine. He might be angling for something else.
Now, honestly, who would want Boss Hogg in their cabinet or administration anyway? But let's be fair to Haley. He has more hair, and I think he's taller than Boss Hogg. but I would love to see a picture of him in an all-white suit with a white cowboy hat. Yeah, that'd be fun. Well, now here's my next question. If you were Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi, I personally think he'd have a better chance trying to build operations in Iowa, particularly if you think Mike Huckabee's not going to run because you pull from same of the same pool. Why not base your operation in Iowa more heavily than New Hampshire? The only Southern politician that's ever done well in New Hampshire is Bill Clinton. I mean, that's like end of list.
You said the same pool. You think Haley Barbour is the kind of guy that appeals strongly to the evangelical social conservative type?
I think if there's a void there, he could try to fill it. I mean, he's not as good a fit, no. But if there's a void and no one's a good fill for that void, then he could try. I mean, it's not going to be Mitt Romney and, you know, Mormonism.
Then why does it appear that he's going to make his stand in New Hampshire instead?
I don't know. That's what I wonder. Well, I mean, why is his strategy different than my strategy would be for him? Catherine, what do you think?
I hadn't really thought about that strategy. I really don't have a good answer for that. I think it's probably just because it's the first state, even though it's going to be really close, isn't it?
It's the first primary state. Right. Iowa's the first caucus state, so maybe it has something to do with primary and caucus if he just likes primaries better. So maybe on something there. And Catherine, we did establish that you use your time more wisely than me because you don't sit around strategizing for Haley Barbour and fantasy politics world. So good for you, Catherine.
I try to avoid thinking about Haley Barbour as much as possible, to be honest.
Look, guys, I think Haley Barbour is really an establishment Republican, and I think his angle in New Hampshire is to do one thing, finish second and turn south. I think that's what he's doing. I think he thinks if he can do that, he can position himself as the alternative to Mitt Romney, and that's his only chance to sneak through to the nomination.
But he could never finish second in New Hampshire, could he?
I don't think he could, but that's what he's going to try to do by getting on the ground early. That's all I can figure out.
And maybe that's it. Maybe he sees a void, Tim. You're right. Maybe he sees, like, not enough people are putting any emphasis in New Hampshire. He can be the number two guy. Maybe he got these people and he can hire them. And sometimes if you can get people that are well-connected in the state, then they can get you introduced to the right folks. Because this is a place where you go into rooms and there might be, 30 people in them. And we're used to presidential politics, being completely, wholesale. But this is one of the few states where it's still retail. So,
well, that's a good point. You know, it might be easier to do New Hampshire. It's smaller. It's, retail politics. It might just be, you might not need as many people on the ground, and it might just be easier. If you looked at the two and said, well, it's probably easier for me to do New Hampshire. I don't know.
And I tell you're going to need some sort of organization, any candidate does, in a caucus state like Iowa. You got to have the troops there to get the troops out, and I mean the true believers. Think of the Peanut Express in 76 and stuff like that. That's the kind of people you've got to have on the ground. And Mike Huckabee had those kind of true believers back in 08, and that's why he won up there. And I think Barbour is doing the right thing. I do.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it unfolds. And I did think it was interesting in that this is a guy that we said, he's put his foot in his mouth, he's done. He may be done, but he doesn't think he is, which I guess at this point we're talking about who's running, who's not. That's the only person that counts as far as if he's going to run or not. Well, speaking of people deciding whether they're not going to run or not, Tim Kaine, who is currently the DNC chairman and former governor of Virginia, is still deciding whether or not he should run for Virginia governor. Now, of course, if he decides to run for Virginia governor, that leaves the top post of the DNC available. And they keep mentioning all these folks that currently have jobs for being at the DNC. I don't quite understand why they can't find somebody that's not quite so busy, like, say, the governor of Massachusetts or someone that works in the Obama administration. Is it a little too early, Catherine, to be discussing this?
I think it might be, but, I'm all about Jennifer Granholm myself.
Yeah, and she actually does not currently have a job, so she would actually have the freedom to devote her full attention to
teaching. She's teaching.
Well, what I'm saying is she wouldn't have to – like, at times they've picked people where they're currently the governor, they're currently the senator, or say they have some job in which they need to devote their time to that. And, I think they're stretched a little thin. I mean, Tim Kaine, he was finishing up the governorship of Virginia. I think the overlap was like a month. And in this case, it would just be she could finish her teaching duties out or what have you. And I know sometimes these teachers that are at big universities – they come and lecture four times in a semester, and that's considered teaching, if you will. It's not every day or even 3 days out of the week. That'd just be interesting to see. But, of course, that's if he runs. Now, if he doesn't run, once again, this is a state where, you have George Allen, who has baggage, running and most likely the Republican nominee. And then it's a state where President Obama is actually leading. Tim? Should Tim Kaine go ahead and do this thing?
I think he should. He left office as a pretty popular politician. The nomination is essentially the other pretenders to the throne are saying the nomination is yours, and we're waiting to see what you do before we decide to get in. So he's got a free ride all the way to the election against, in my estimation, a flawed candidate who is also prone to verbal gaffes and not the brightest light bulb out there. And yeah, I think he might could win this thing. And as for successors to him, well, maybe Governor Granholm is burning her bridges behind her. It seems like she is. You know, our most successful recent DNC chair was Howard Dean, in my estimation, an ex-governor. You touched on that, not a sitting governor. And he was a street fighter. I'd like to see a street fighter in that job like Dean was. Maybe Strickland of Ohio. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. And obviously, if Tim Kaine jumps in, and we may know by next Sunday's Kudzu Vine, then we can talk about the next stage. But let's go ahead and go from Virginia to all the way across the South and welcome our guest in from Louisiana. Welcome Lamar Parmentel from the Daily Kingfish.
How y'all doing?
Yeah, good to have you on, Lamar. So you've taken over the Daily Kingfish, and Lamar, we've had about three different people that ran that blog in the time we've had the Kudzu Vine, and what amazes me is it stays so quality. Usually a blog kind of takes on one person's personality, and once that one person moves on, it kind of loses something, but y'all have been able to maintain real quality and depth of coverage of Louisiana through Ryan to Stephen to yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the most important thing is that there's a lot of quality, shall we say, entertainment, there's just so much richness in Louisiana politics. It's easy to write about.
Yes, we know the storied history of Louisiana, and then obviously there's changes in around the area. A lot of times, unfortunately, through natural disaster or man-made disaster more recently, and we'll get to some of that. But Lamar, y'all got y'all's elections this year, and typically you would think there would be a candidate for governor to challenge the sitting government, but it seems like that hadn't quite gotten locked down. What's the status of the governor's race in Louisiana?
Governor's race is just about at a standstill right now. On February, I think it was the 12th, maybe it was the 19th, Bob Jindal reported what everyone expected, which was that he had raised nearly $10 million in the previous year for his reelection. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Bobby, you know, perhaps being a presidential or vice presidential candidate. And I think everyone knows that the raising that he's doing is under state finance law, meaning that the money he's putting into this particular campaign account cannot be used to run for, let's just say, president or Senate. So this has all been raising for his gubernatorial race. And up until this time, You have rightly noted that there are no other candidates. I think Bob Jindal, when he ran for governor in 2007, he said that he had announced that he was running for governor on January, I think it was the 27th of 2007, which in this cycle it already happened about 2 months ago. So it's really at a standstill. I think there's been a lot of folks that, you know, would of course love to be governor, but they really want to see how badly damaged Bob is for this legislative session. The budget's a big problem, like it is in many other states. And Bob is going to take quite a beating, I think, in a legislative session. And the question is, how damaged is he from this session? If he's really damaged, I think we see, you know, potentially we see at least one, if not two, strong candidates. If he's not, I think he cruises.
Yes. Well, give us some names. Who's behind the scenes maybe seeing if they can line themselves up?
Well, I'll start with the easiest name, and the easiest name is Joel Chasson from Destrehan up the river from New Orleans. He's the Senate president right now, and the only reason I say it's easy to say he's a potential is he's already commented and said that you know, had Bobby perhaps not run again, Joel has already said that he would want to run for governor, and he said in his state finance filings that he was raising money for a higher office. Now, you see, President Chasson is not able to run for re-election. So what he's going to have to do now is he's going to have to navigate this legislative session. Now, I don't think Joel Chasson wants to run for governor right now because he's only got about $180,000 in his campaign account. So by my math, he's got about 100 times less amount of money than he needs. Now, it's not to say that Democrats couldn't raise the money, and Chasson's a great candidate for that. You know, he's a Democrat through and through. He's resisted party switching. He's from a growing parish, St. Charles Parish. He's a trial lawyer, so he's got that money. I think he's, and I don't know him personally in terms of his finances, but I know he's said to have at least a decent, comfortable way of life. And I think that perhaps he would be a great candidate statewide. Someone else, I think, on the Republican side that would love to run for governor is John Kennedy, the state treasurer. I don't think he will. I think he's been a burr in the side of Jindal's saddle, and I think he'd love to take Jindal on. But I just don't see him doing it. You know, his brother is a political consultant, although I hear they don't get along. But they do have, he would have the infrastructure to be pretty successful. He could raise a lot of money. He did raise a lot of money last year. I think he raised nearly $1 million. But I just don't know if he would want to take on a fellow Republican. There are folks, very conservative folks, that don't like Bobby Jindal, but there aren't enough of them to make a difference.
Yes, and John Kennedy's a little bit of a self-promoter. I believe he's been in both parties in the last 4 years. So
correct.
He's kind of out for himself. Well, Lamar, I'm not on here by myself. I got my co-host Tim Shiflett and Catherine Smith. I'm going to pass it around to them to ask questions about either the governor's race, the first lady, or other statewide races. And you're going to come back
sure.
to me, and I'm going to ask a few more other things. Tim?
Sure.
Yes, sir. Last year in a post, late perhaps in October, November, the Daily Kingfish said one race to really watch would be the Secretary of State's race, and that it would be winnable. Is that still the case, and why?
Yes, that race's got to be the best job in the state. I mean, Lieutenant Governor really doesn't do much. That's a good job, but the Secretary of State's got this great advantage. You put your name on every filing, every corporate filing, every single piece of paper that comes out of state government that returns to people, almost all of them got the Secretary of State's name on it. It's all over the website. Every time there's an election, we have a lot of elections, you got them on TV talking about the returns. I mean, we're talking about somebody who gets an enormous amount of publicity, which is why Jay Darden was able to leverage that coming into, you know, he was really just coming out of Baton Rouge, and he comes out, he becomes Secretary of State, his name recognition goes up, he's able to win that special election with Lieutenant Governor. I think the Secretary of State's office, from what we heard earlier, although I think this might change very soon, there might be a very strong Democratic candidate for Secretary of State, and that's not easy to say for any statewide. And now, Caroline Fayard, who made a runoff with Jay Darden in that Lieutenant Governor's special election last October, has just about said to almost anybody that she's running for statewide office. Now, up until recently, everyone has believed, and in fact, I think she's even said, that she's very interested in running for Secretary of State. She's able to raise a lot of money. She's young. She's well-known now statewide. She's spent a lot of money on media, getting her name out there. And I think she'd be a very strong candidate, probably outraise and outspend almost anybody else in that race, potentially. Now, the other thing is, I think since that time and since the non-emergence of a challenger, I think she's probably thought about a bunch of races. And I know I've heard that she would love to take on a more, a higher office. I don't know for sure if she's going to do it, but I will say that the Secretary of State's race, if she were to run for it, will be something that she could very easily, I think, win. just because of her name recognition, because of the current Secretary of State, who was under J. Alden. Tom Schindler is really not, from the North Shore, is really not considered a strong political player. I would say his name recognition is almost nil. He really was sort of put into this job only because Jay moved up. He's had a year to kind of make some noise, and I don't think he has. It's kind of one of these offices that, yeah, your name's on everything, but in 4 years your name being on everything makes a difference, but in 3 or 4 months it hasn't made that much a difference. I think he's going to run. He said he's going to run, but I don't know what his fundraising capabilities are. And this is, again, a race that, you know, to a lot of people really doesn't mean anything. It's not the type of race in which you can go to donors who need something from you. There's really no one needs anything from the Secretary of State's race except a bunch of paperwork. And that's why someone like Caroline Fayer, for example, might be able to raise money just because of her personal and her father's personal networks and make a lot of hay there. Now, the other person I think that might run for that office and has been said to do so is Kevin Davis, who's the St. Tammany Parish president. He said, I think, already that he wanted to do it. It hasn't announced or anything, but I suspect that he might want to move up and get in that office as well.
Okay, and we want to jump over to one more person that I wanted to ask you about, and then I'm going to pass it over to Catherine. And that is Joseph Gal. He suddenly has nothing to do. So is he perhaps looking to revitalize his career by running for anything statewide, or have you heard anything about him?
Well, I've heard a lot of things about Joe Gal. The problem with Joe Gal right now is he doesn't have anything to do, and the last time we've heard of him, which is the last few weeks, he's been working with BP to I don't know what he's doing specifically, but he's been handling some sort of public relations or claims or whatever it is. It's nothing that's giving him a lot of goodwill, let's just put it that way. He is not working on the right side of the register, I think, on that issue. And he's coming out of New Orleans. Now, there aren't a lot of candidates, I think, that can win out of New Orleans. If I were a candidate, I would never want to be a Republican coming out of New Orleans, which is what Walker Hines, who's a state rep, who's already announced that he's running for Secretary of State, that he's going to raise $600,000. His father is Bill Hines, who runs Jones Walker Law Firm here in New Orleans, and that's one of the most powerful law firms in the state. But I'll tell you what, it's not going to be an easy thing being a Republican. If you're a Democrat, you come out of New Orleans, you got at least you can bank a decent amount of votes coming out of New Orleans, and you work out statewide. Being a Republican, I wouldn't do it. I don't know why you would. Joe Gal could raise a lot of money. I think he's a likable guy. He had very good, even with Democrats, people generally seem to like the guy. I wouldn't say he's well-liked, but no one hated him for that matter, unless he were on the other side during the election. You know, he's a Republican. He voted against the president. That's not something people in New Orleans like. And he got kicked out. I don't think he has an opportunity right now to come for Secretary of State because of what he's doing with BP. But I'll tell you what, if he wanted to, if he was interested, I'm sure he could raise the money.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Catherine?
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm glad to I hope you recovered well from Mardi Gras. I know it's just over. I wanted to ask you about the First Lady of Louisiana. I read a little bit about this charity that she's got going, and is there any outrage about the potential influence of these big, you know, Marathon, AT&T, Elon, you know, all this? Is there any concern, or is that pretty much standard fare in Louisiana politics?
Well, I think it's actually up in the air right now. I think one thing is certain. I think everyone knows this right now. Bobby Jindal came in and said one thing. He said, I'm going to be the guy who turns the page on Louisiana politics. I mean, that's what his promise was, you know. Like, he's this state's, like the president right now. You know, he comes in and says, change, and I'm going to change everything, and, you know, lobbyists aren't running my government. Bobby Jindal became governor of Louisiana. And just like in all the dynamics of all state is basically this. Like, Democrats are the old corrupt ones, and Republicans are the reforms. And that's what you run on. And Bobby Jindal is the ultimate. He was the crown prince, the ultimate reformer, not a politician, even though he was. But, you know, a guy, this brainy guy who's going to come out of Brown, Rhodes Scholar, you know, really going to set things straight. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people right now are saying this guy is all talk and no walk. You know, he's got this, he was the gold standards of ethics. He's reformed ethics in this state, except for the governor's office, okay? He goes ahead, he's got this fundraiser, this foundation, which is the newest scam. I mean, that's all it is. It's the same scam by a different name. You got one woman, his fundraiser, she's got three pots. She goes, someone says, I want to make a donation. Okay, you maxed out for our campaign. Well, guess what? I've got a leadership pack. You want to make a donation to that? Okay. You made a donation to the leadership pack. That's done. Now we want to make another donation. Oh, we're already maxed out by the law. You know where you can make a donation? My wife's foundation. Unlimited. Okay? All of these ways are ways to touch the government. Get things out of the governor's office. And I'll tell you what. There's one problem with it. Unlike some of our previous elected officials, Bobby ain't making a dime off of any of this, which is something that people always are going to say, well, look, he's enriching himself off the government. He's not, although he is a millionaire, and no one can figure out how. The guy's never had a private-sector job. But anyway, the guy never made a dollar off these things. The problem is that what he's doing is he's selling our future for his political ambition. And that's the bottom line on Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal's all about Bobby Jindal. He's the most successful politician in Louisiana in the last 25 years, and that's saying a lot. Bobby Jindal's all about making Bobby Jindal better. And and the saddest thing about it is Bobby spent a lot of time talking about how he wasn't that guy. And everyone believed him, or at least a lot of people did. I never did, but a lot of people did. And he's really made a fool of himself with this foundation thing. And they really went into overdrive, man. Those guys, his guy Kyle, his communications office went crazy. Because they knew, they smelled the blood in the water. Once they did this story, man, I mean, $250,000, $100,000, that's not a little money. And I know they're installing these beautiful whiteboards in these classrooms and et cetera, et cetera. It's for a great cause. But I'll tell you what, they don't have to do it through that foundation. If they like whiteboards so much, they can buy it themselves and give them to the schools. There's no reason.
Exactly, yeah.
So
the article I read said that there was one of the people on the staff of the foundation was also worked in the governor's office. Like, I mean, that kind of stuff really, I mean, aside from the obvious ethical problems with that, it's the kind of thing that people really get pissed off about. You know, you're like, what? You know, how can this person work for the governor and work for the foundation? You know, those are like pretty obvious oversight for someone who's so politically strategic. Like, I, when I read that, I was like, wow, what a dumbass. Excuse me.
Well, I'll tell you one other thing before we go off this topic. And I think the question is, does it have legs? Yes. I think this is one of the worst stories Bob Jindal has ever had to face. And I don't think one person in 100 in this state believes that this foundation was set up to help these kids solely. Okay, solely. You know, the foundation started right after he became governor. The person collecting the checks, the same person that collects the checks for his campaign. I mean, I know that other people that can collect checks, it's not a complicated business. So the thing that this has proven, and I think has proven, it's going to put a cap on where the general can go. You know, in terms of his, you know, he was at 70% approval or whatever. This is a cap now. People are going to look at him and say, whoa, wait a minute, this guy ain't any different than the others. Maybe he's the best person to the majority of people. I think he's a crook, but maybe he's the best person. I'll tell you what, he'll never be a saint again. He's sitting now.
Right. Exactly. It just brings him down to the level of all the politicians instead of the sort of higher level that he seemed to be approaching. Okay,
right.
That's all I've got. I'm back, sending it back to David.
Yes, and you mentioned something about BP earlier with Joseph Cal.
Yeah.
Lamar, how is BP and the oil spill affected, you know, politics in Louisiana? Because you would think that people would kind of recoil from big business a little bit and maybe say, hey, government's not as bad as a lot of my southern neighbors that we're seeing across the South think it is? Or has it not really had an impact like that?
No impact. Not in that way, I wouldn't say. No one, listen, do you know who became the most famous politician out of this BP thing? And who made the most, the loudest noise and the most, it was Scott Angel, who was lieutenant governor after Mitch became mayor of New Orleans. Scott Angel, who used to be a Democrat, now he's a Republican, smart guy, great, great, smart politician. He went to that, what is it called, Rally for Economic Survival down at the Cajun Dome. Guy goes there, gives his speech. Everyone goes crazy. By the way, the whole thing put on by ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, whatever. They go out there having this big party like, look at these Obama guys. They're ruining our world. They're ruining business. We're going to lose all the jobs. All the what do you call it? All the platforms are going to just slow away. They're all going to take into South America and all this stuff. I'll tell you what. The Louisiana workforce just came out with their new statistics on 2010. Guess what? Unbelievable job growth in Lafayette, in Houma, et cetera, et cetera. I'll tell you what, nobody lost any job long term. They're coming back. They're still going to put permits out there. The oil didn't leave. They ain't going to leave the oil there. It's still there. They ain't going to give up the leases. They got the leases. Why not work the leases? They will. Of course they will. It was a pause. Of course, they're acting crazy. But, of course, in this state, it's all over. That argument already been done. BP, so everyone hates BP. You know why they hate BP? Because it's British Petroleum. British Petroleum. Look at these British guys. This guy wants to go on his yacht and drink his whatever. This is, they hate him about big business like oil companies. Oil companies are good people. They put us to work. No, no, no. He's British. That's the problem. We got the American companies. We never do this. Now, of course, it's not true. It doesn't matter. That's what's important. So in Louisiana, as long as whatever it is, what. One out of 12, one out of 10 folks in Louisiana have had a job that's directly or indirectly, you know, oil industry job. Ain't going to change. They're not going to change. I mean, the only person that ever took on oil company successfully was Huey Long, and they shot him.
Well, I mean, Lamar, that's all we need you on the ground to say it, to give us the perspective that you're actually living and seeing day to day. Well, real quickly, you made me think of another question. You talked about your lieutenant governor used to be a Democrat. Your attorney general, last Democrat, I guess, elected statewide, switched just in the last few weeks, Buddy Caldwell. Is there kind of a
sense that House on that kind story, of by the way.
What you say?
We broke that story. We got all,
yeah.
I mean, Daily King broke that story. You see it on the ABC Note and what do you call that place? Politico. We broke that story. So yes, Bobby Caldwell. He was our great friend, the guy who sued over Obamacare. He says when he's a Democrat, he sued over Obamacare.
Yeah, but I mean, it's there a sense with among Democrats that, you know, it's going to be like, I don't know if you're familiar with other states, but South Carolina, there are no statewide Democratic officials. There had been one before this year. Alabama, there had been the lieutenant governor and other agriculture commissioners, statewide elected officials. Now there are none. Georgia had the labor commissioner, attorney general, and agriculture commissioner. Now there are none. Are y'all kind of getting the feeling in Louisiana that it may be a four-year cycle like it is for other southern states?
You know, I think the most important thing is that we're clearing up the deadwood, okay? I mean, we're just catching up where everyone else is. I mean, Louisiana had more Democrats in 2003 than probably any other southern state except for Arkansas. I mean, we still have the most registered Democrats by proportion, I think, except for Arkansas. The problem is that everybody here decided that we got a black president and he's real liberal, and, you know, that's the bottom line, the final straw. He's the worst. You know, and I think we got rid of some of the worst guys that were, you know, pretending to be Democrats, and now maybe we'll start growing some real ones. I mean, there are real ones here. They just never got elected because you have to be what I call a crypto Republican, a fake Republican, you know, like you have to be this guy who said, you know, I don't stand for anything that the National Democrats stand for. I don't stand for anything that the Democratic Party stands for, but I'm a Democrat just like you. And that was about it. So now that everybody decided that we got rid of these guys like Buddy Caldwell, we're going to be fine. I think there's no problem with the Buddy Caldwell switching. He's really not that strong a politician. I think if Jeff Landry, and I think we reported this on the Kingfish, if Jeff Landry were, for example, not to be able to take his congressional seat or they made a deal, I think he'd run for attorney general, you know, because that's where all the great Republican teabagging heroes, that's where they come from, right, to be attorney general, like that guy in Virginia. You sue Obama over everything. And that's what Jeff Landry would like to do. You make the news every day saying, I hate Obama. That would make him his day. So I think that if Buddy Caldwell, he switched because he saw the writing on the wall. You know, if he were to run against Jeff Landry as a Democrat, he'd definitely lose. If he's a Republican, well, he probably will lose. But anyway, it looks a lot better. I think that, you know, he was suing Obama before he was a Republican. He was useless, and I'm glad to get rid of him. It's terrible for the party, but the party in Louisiana, when I say the party, I mean the Louisiana Democratic Party, whatever, who cares? But the Democrats in Louisiana, the people who actually believe in some of the things that, you know, might make this a better state, you know, we'll get candidates in the future that will, you know, run on real democratic values. You know, no one has an alternative. If the only flavor you have is vanilla, your favorite flavor is vanilla. Once you taste strawberry or chocolate, then you say, whoa, these are pretty good too. But no one offers that here. We're not Baskin Robbins, you know. We're like one flavor. But I'm going to open a Baskin Robbins, and we'll have 31 flavors, and suddenly, you never know.
Yeah. Well, Lamar, one more question. It's a big one, so
sure.
If I take you all the 4 minutes left in the show, redistricting,
sure.
What's the lay of the land there?
The state is now growing. We lost one of the congressional seats, and as I was saying, Mr. Landry in the coastal areas, he wants to have one, and I'll just talk about the congressional redistricting. When it comes down to the legislature, you know, I think that's not as much interest, but congressional redistricting is interesting, I think, to people outside the state because they say, whoa, you know, wait a minute, you're going to lose a seat. Who's going to be the guy without this chair when the music stops? And I think the guy without the chair is going to be Jeff Landry. Now, I wouldn't bet my life on it because I have heard that they've got this deal. I don't think it's a signed, sealed, delivered thing, but a deal, and they get this, you'll love this thing. The teabag goes down, the Acadiana folk and the teabag guys and the Black Caucus are going to get together, or at least this is the idea. They get together and they get two things. They get one coastal district, meaning from Mississippi to Texas, one district, all on the coast of South Louisiana. And then we get two what they call like minority districts, like two districts that would have a majority black district, which basically in this state and most of the South means 9 out of 10 African-American vote Democrat. So you have two districts that a Democrat could win. So they're willing to get the Acadiana delegation and the black delegation in the Louisiana legislature together to vote on a plan that would give Jeff Landry a seat, or what would be a seat he would have to contest with Charles Bustani, the doctor. The two of these guys would have to be together, and then the two seats, one would be out of Baton Rouge, a black seat out of Baton Rouge, and maybe a black seat in Shreveport, or one out of New Orleans and one out of Shreveport, both of which would be, you know, what they call like winnable seats for a Democrat. You know, that's the most interesting thing. So, like, I think everyone understands, right? So what happens is the congressmen, like the federal folk, they don't get to vote on their own plan. They have to lobby the Louisiana legislature to draw these maps for them. So whatever the congressmen all agree upon doesn't really matter. Because they could just, the legislature could decide, no, we don't want to do that. So the most interesting thing is that plan, the single coastal district, and then two, I think for Democrats it would be a huge, huge thing. Because if you get two seats in which a Democrat could conceivably win, it would change Louisiana all the way. I mean, really, you get these guys, you get a new class of Democrats coming out of North Louisiana, and then maybe you get a Democrat out of New Orleans or Baton Rouge, and then that would really make a difference. And I think that maybe that would happen. I don't know. I mean, Charles Bustani, everyone else is safe, you know. So Fleming and Alexander, and these are our congressmen. Fleming, Alexander. We've got Steve Scalise, who's from like the St. Tammany area, and then we got Cedric Richmond, who's our only Democrat coming out of New Orleans. And then we've got one more guy, what's his name? Bustani Cassidy, who's out of Baton Rouge. And so all the guys I said, except for Bustani and Landry, are really safe. And I think it's going to be a really interesting fight. And the legislature is going to decide in only 10 days. So we're going to see a really big fight over whether or not we give the seat a one coastal district or we keep it split up. And Bustani doesn't want this because Jeff Landry, I'm sure you all know who Jeff Landry is. He's this feedbagger, real angry guy, you know. He hates Obama and he spends all his time. He's like this guy who like spends maybe 99% of his time thinking about how he can attack Obama. Like, this is his thing, right? That's what they do. And so we'll see if Jeff Landry, who's a real knife fighter, who beat this guy Hunt Downer, who's like a real... He was an old school politician, I think, and also a great one because he had been the leader of the Louisiana National Guard. So he's like a soldier, and he'd been in politics for a long time. And everyone said, that guy's definitely going to win this seat, which was Charlie Melançon's seat. And then guess what? Jeff Landry come out of nowhere, and everyone loves the teabaggers, and everyone's excited. And Jeff Landry just knifes him in the gut, and Downer goes down. And Landry says, this guy's a fraud, and he disrespects our military. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's general, right? So Jeff Landry is a knife fighter. So Bustani doesn't want that. He doesn't want that fight. So that's going to be the fight in Louisiana. We're going to see, you know, whether or not we can get two Democratic seats, two seats that could possibly be Democratic. Because right now, no way. We have one in New Orleans, and it's two. There are too few people in New Orleans now. So you got to make a seat. For example, Cedric Richmond go all the way to Baton Rouge if he wants enough African American votes. So I know I've gone over, but that's the way it looks.
Oh yeah, Lamar, we enjoyed having you on, and we'll have you again on in a few months down the road when things come a little clearer with filing and whatnot. I know filing's not till September in Louisiana, so we'll get you on before that because you've been a great guest, and like you said at the top, Louisiana is a fascinating state.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. I hope I didn't go
thank
too
you,
long.
Thank you, sir.
No, great thank information.
You. No, it was
yeah.
great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks again for Lamar for coming on and informing us. And
thanks, guys.
Jim and Catherine, been a great show, and we're going to close with that with all four of us on the line. Good evening.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.